Hello and welcome to Bite Back Chats Books. This week, we're heading to number 10 and into the corridors of power with Peter Cardwell, the author of new book, The Secret Life of Special Advisors. Peter served under four different government ministers during his time as a special advisor, or SPAD, as they're commonly known. But what is it that a SPAD actually does? Here to tell us and share some excellent anecdotes is Peter. Welcome. Cardwell, welcome to the Virtual Bite Back podcast.
Very good to be here. Thanks very much for having me, Vicky.
Well, thank you very much for appearing. We're here to talk about your book, The Secret Life of Special Advisors, which is a deep dive into the mysterious and murky world of the special advisor, or SPAD, as I believe they're often known. So can we start off with the simplest question? Why did you decide to write it?
It was an interesting process because I knew an author who had done some work, had written, I think, one or maybe more than one book for Bite Back previously, who put me in touch with my brilliant editor there, Olivia Beattie, and we discussed this, we discussed the project. I had recently been reshuffled, shall we say, sacked from government, and Olivia and I had a chat over a nice glass of wine. And I then put a proposal forward for the book. I mean, in terms of motivation to write it, it wasn't something I particularly planned to do. It was sort of suggested to me by this other author, by Michael Crick, who many people will know is a very, very well-known and well-respected political author and broadcast journalist as well. And I thought that, a number of books have been written. Alistair Campbell had written his diaries. Various other people. Damien McBride wrote a brilliant book, probably the best book I've ever read about Westminster politics. Complete coincidence, I assure you, that it's a Bite Back publication. But a really, really good book about 10 years ago. But since that time, no one had really written about the world of SPADs. And also, Damien McBride's book in particular was a sort of how not to do it. Alistair Campbell's books were sort of a personal diary, really, of his very high level, talking to the Prime Minister every day kind of thing. Whereas I, as a sort of mid-ranking special advisor, had more of a view from the foothills, as Chris Mullen put it, when he was writing his diaries. My book isn't a memoir as such, but it is a sort of how to be a SPAD, I suppose, and some of the crazy world I inhabited, and the silly things I got up to, as well as the sort of side business of helping to run the country.
Well, yeah, you say it's not a memoir, but there are some very eye-popping anecdotes in there that certainly made my my jaw drop slightly when I read them.
What did you like?
I think maybe who was it that split his trousers and had to have them.
Adam Bolton, Bolton and the trousers. Yeah, well, this was brilliant because some of the book is about when I was working in journalism, and I worked in and around Westminster really for 10 years. I was a special advisor for 3.5 of those, and it's fascinating because you have these very respected, very well-known people, often sort of household names, like Adam Bolton, the formerly political editor of Sky News, now a presenter and editor at large is his rather wonderful job title. And he was in he was in one of the party conferences. There's a whole chapter in party conferences. You sort of love them as a journalist, hate them as a special advisor. They're sort of something to be endured. But yes, Adam was about to go live and his trousers split, and one of his producers had to sort of put them back together again with a bit of gaffer tape. And then the gaffer tape, of course, is black on one side but white on the other. And she had the intimate experience of almost sort of colouring in the white bit, which was covering what I think Taylor's called the seat of his trousers. So just before he went live to the nation. So pretty interesting time, and one that has a story that has gone into folklore in Sky News, but is perhaps not widely known.
Yes, I cringed very hard reading that particular anecdote, I think. So you said you were a journalist before you became a SPAD. So let's talk a bit about that. Why did you decide to make the leap from journalism to special advisor?
I'd been a journalist for 10 years. I'd worked for Newsnight, Question Time, Sky News, and I was a reporter for Good Morning Britain on ITV. It was a really great career. I really enjoyed it. I worked in Belfast as well for a while, but I really felt that the time had come for a new challenge, and politics is all about timing and opportunities. And what was interesting was that my job in Newsnight was to kind of persuade special advisors that what they really wanted to do was to put their minister on Newsnight to be sort of mauled by Jeremy Paxman. And one of those special advisors who I got on with very well was a woman called Fiona Hill, who has sort of become a bit notorious as one of the terrible twins, as they call them, the chiefs of staff to Theresa May, Nick and Fee. And I knew Fiona Hill. I know Fiona Hill. She's a very nice person. And she very kindly offered me the job. I just sort of, she became chief of staff to Theresa May in Downing Street. I thought, I'll put in my CV. They may be looking for people. They may not. I've no idea. I may hear nothing more about this. And within a week, I got the job. It was a very strange process. But in terms of why I wanted to do it, I think I'd seen ministers talk. I'd spoken to a lot of politicians. I knew a lot of politicians. Especially the job at Newsnight was to get to know politicians, to get to know what they were thinking and pick up the gossip and the background chat and why things were happening in politics rather than just the headlines, to get a really in-depth kind of idea of it. And I think I loved that. I loved Westminster and I wanted to see it from another side. I'm not the most tribal. I am a member of the Conservative Party. I'm not the most tribal person, it must be said. And of course, a lot of the interviews that I'd done were of people I disagreed with. But of course, that can't come over. You've got to be completely impartial and just put reasonable questions to people. So, I mean, I'd interviewed people over the course of my career from, you know, Martin McGuinness of Sinn Féin to kind of Gordon Brown to, you know, various politicians who you've, Theresa May, people you've heard of. And and then I sort of thought, well, what do these SPAD people do? What's their job? And that just sounded, it just sounded like a really interesting job. And my instinct was right. It was the best job I've ever done. I really enjoyed it. They never last forever. I got 3.5 years out of it. Most people don't get more than 2 years out of it. Oh, wow. And I was very, very privileged to do that.
Yeah, it's it does seem quite an unstable career path, but. You know, when you were on the other side, first you were heckling SPADs and then you were, I guess, a SPAD being heckled. What was your, did the reality of being a SPAD match up to your expectations of what the job was going to be like?
Yeah, I mean, I think it hit me like a freight train in the first few months in terms of exactly what it was. I mean, you think, especially I worked in the Northern Ireland office for the first year and a half or so, and you think you know the policy, but you really, really don't. There's so much to it. There's so much to know and so much kind of behind the scenes stuff and different motivations, and everybody in politics has an agenda, no matter where they're coming from, no matter how honourable they are. Everybody has an agenda and wants to push something forward. So it was a very different job from the outside than it was from the inside. And I think a lot of people, a lot of journalists particularly, think, oh, how hard can it be? But actually the world of Whitehall is very, very strange and very interesting, and the civil service is a very bizarre institution, as well as, you know, politics itself. So you have, you know, often very, very fast moving things, you know, you never quite know what's going to happen from one day to the next. But then there are other things that are very fixed and things that, you know, there's procedures to go through and processes and so on. So very, very different from the inside. And I think anybody, I think it reminds me of a little bit of journalists who go into PR, for example. I mean, it's a different job, but a lot of journalists sort of think, oh, how hard can it be? It can't be that difficult. But actually it's a whole different world. And I think that spadding in particular is very complex. There are lots of nuances to it. And lots of people do it in different ways. There are over 100 special advisors at the moment, and you never quite know how other people are doing it, how, you know, are the, you know, you sometimes say to journalists, what's this person like to deal with or whatever? And usually you have a fairly good instinct, but you never quite know. And some people deal with the job in a very, very different way. I hope that I was pretty straight down the line with people, generally told them what I could tell them, didn't tell them what I wasn't supposed to tell them, didn't put things into the public domain that shouldn't have been, some SPADs leak to journalists. I tried, I don't think I did that at all. I don't think I put anything in the public domain that shouldn't have been in the public domain. But of course, it's sometimes difficult to tell. But it was a great job and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating. So then before we get any further for the uninitiated among us or among our listeners, can you just quickly explain what a SPAD is and maybe kind of give a bit of the history of SPADing, as it were?
So the first chapter of the book is about special advisors, about the history of special advisors. It was, you know, politicians have always had advisors around them, people, friends, sometimes family members, sometimes outside political influences, sometimes military people who advise them on things outside the civil service. So the civil service, tens of thousands of civil servants, they're impartial. So they could work for a Boris Johnson government, they could work for a Keir Starmer government. Essentially their job doesn't change that much. Special advisors, in contrast, are political appointees. So when you have a Conservative government, you'll have Conservative special advisors. There are, in contrast to the tens of thousands of civil servants, there are something like 100 or 110, 120 special advisors. They're temporary civil servants seconded to the minister in an advisory role. That's a complicated way of saying that you're essentially, you're a friend, you're an advisor, you're someone who sorts out things for them, you're their representative a lot of the time, you speak to the media on their behalf. In my job, you form policy or interrogate policy if you're a policy advisor. But really over the last 60 years, it's gone from a system that didn't really formally have special advisors within it. Harold Wilson was the person who sort of formalised the role, and then the power and influence has grown. It's waxed and waned a little bit. It was really in the 70s, the sort of pendulum politics between the Conservatives and Labour, that there's sort of a worry that the civil service was kind of filling the vacuum, essentially. And there was a call under the Wilson administration, especially people like Barbara Castle were very keen on special advisors to sort of be an extra pair of eyes and ears, but politically affiliated. So as I say, I'm a member of the Conservative Party, Labour special advisors, members of the Labour Party. And I interview in that history chapter people from all sorts of backgrounds, Labour, Conservative, and actually Lib Dem as well. I interviewed one person who was Nick Clegg's Deputy Chief of Staff, and she had a funny story to tell about Kylie Minogue songs, of all things. So that was very interesting. The role's been around, as I say, for about 60 years. And of course, we know some of the names. People interested in politics will know the names of Damian McBride, Alistair Campbell, and of course, Dominic Cummings, who I worked with.
Cummings, the infamous. Is it a well-established path to power? Because I know you said Jack Straw was a spad to Barbara Castle and he ended up being, Foreign Secretary. So is that unusual?
No, there's quite a few people, and actually the Labour front bench in the early 2010s was actually criticised quite a lot for a lot of people being on the front bench who hadn't had, quote unquote, a real job. I can tell you, being a spad certainly feels like a real job when you're on the phone to the Today programme at 6:30 in the morning and then again at 1:00 at night. There are lots of people who like to say that if you work in Westminster, it's not a real job. But no, there are lots of people who have been special advisors and then gone into politics. Ed Miliband, for example, David Miliband, Ed Balls, various Conservatives, David Cameron, George Osborne, and many, many others. So it's a well-trodden path from special advisor to MP, not something I would want to do, I hasten to add. And actually, it was Andrea Donis, another bite-back author, with whom I agree on basically nothing, who I agree on the fact that special advising is actually quite a good preparation for government. There are lots of junior ministers who I seem to do sort of often fairly similar things to what they did. Obviously, I was never in the House of Commons as speaking or anything like that. You're not elected. You're unelected. A lot of people think that's a problem about special advisors, that they're unelected. They have too much power. But then I would always counter that by saying, the permanent secretaries of departments are unelected as well. Every civil servant is unelected. And in terms of the people who govern us and actually make decisions and implement those decisions, there are only really 650 of them in the House of Commons who are elected. So it's a slightly different argument.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about Andrew Donis, actually, he was, betrayed, I suppose, in the thick of it, which I know that you talk about in your book as well. I think that is probably the best touch point the public has for the role of spads in general, even though people might not know that figures like Adonis' character were spads. Is that an accurate portrayal of life in government?
Well, we used to have a drink at the end of the week, special advisors. There's a sort of rotating, there's only one person who's managed to get through the whole of the Conservative government's time in office, right through from 2010 until the present day, as someone who works in government. So we're talking about ministers, prime minister, cabinet minister, that kind of thing, and special advisors. And that's a guy called Sheridan Westlake, who, if he didn't exist, you'd have to make him up. He's sort of the dean of spads, the super spad. And he's in number 10 at the moment and has been since 2015. And he holds drinks every Thursday evening at a rotating cast of Westminster pubs. I couldn't possibly name which ones, otherwise his fan club would be coming along to get autographs and hold signs and things. But he always says, what I often said at those gatherings was, have you had a West Wing week or a thick of it week? I mean, everybody in politics has, certainly of my generation, I'm 36, will have watched the West Wing and maybe, more than once, and I actually had a quiz during lockdown, which my old boss, Robert Buckland, the Justice Secretary, was the quiz master about the West Wing. And of course, the thick of it, and the thick of it is obviously the sort of chaotic side, whereas the West Wing side is the sort of, you know, soaring rhetoric and everything going largely smoothly. So we'd often ask during having a drink, you know, did you have a West Wing week or a thick of it week? I think bits of it are the thick of it. I have sort of shouted in frustration in the office, you know, I'm stuck in an episode of the thick of it. But sometimes you get the West Wing moments as well. But I think, you know, for people who've watched the West Wing, who've watched the thick of it, also Yes Minister as well, they'll recognise little bits of the book within that, and I do reference those three series. The one I don't really reference is House of Cards, because it's not really particularly relevant to special advisors, but of course those political series are well known to so many people who follow politics.
I think there are a few moments during the book where you get away with quoting the thick of it to your department and stuff like that, which I found very
yes amusing. I rather unkindly described one civil servant as so dense light bends around him, which is a direct quote from the thick of it. And actually, there was one guy on who I worked with very closely at the Ministry of Housing who knew the thick of it backwards, a civil servant who knew the thick of it backwards, and he always busted me when I used the lines. But I did actually use a line from Josh in the West Wing. Every spad wants to be Josh in the West Wing, and none of us ever will be. But he once said, I was sort of paraphrasing him, when he once said, you know, the president is a good man. He's got a good heart. He doesn't hold a grudge. That's what he pays me for. And I used a line a bit like that once as well. But yeah, you've got to kind of have a twinkle in your eye sometimes, especially when you're in the. Sometimes a special advisor does need to be pretty harsh in civil servants. You've got to protect your minister. And the thing is that, you know, every who has a special advisor needs to find people who will go to the wire for them, who will work long hours, who will go the extra mile. And you know, James Brokenshire, for example, who was my boss, currently the security minister, but previously he was Northern Ireland secretary, he was housing secretary, so I worked with him for nearly 3 years. I mean, James is one of my top 10 people in the whole world, and I, you know, I crawl over broken glass for him. He's just an absolute gentleman. And it's funny, actually, a friend of mine who's read the book already said, sort of half jokingly said that James Brokenshire comes out of the book better than God comes out of the Bible, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, I was interested about that, actually, because one of the things you say in the book as well is that you as a SPAD have to balance the demands of number 10 with the needs of the ministers that you're working under. Was that difficult? Like, how did you manage that?
Yeah, it's always a difficult dance. I mean, essentially, number 10 tell you to do things and you've got to do them. There's always a bit of resistance from civil servants. There's always a bit of resistance sometimes from other special advisors and from ministers saying, well, why should I do this? And the question you've always got to ask is, you know, if a civil servant comes through and says, number 10 says you've got to do this, the question is always, who in number 10? Is it someone roughly on your level, or is it someone, you know, is it Dominic Cummings telling you to do something, in which case you absolutely do it?
Mm. And so, talking about Cummings in that case, it kind of feels that we have to broach the subject. He's not quite the dean of SPADs, he's maybe the overlord of SPADs, the controversial leader of the SPADs. You said before that being a SPAD is quite a precarious job. They seem to chop and change, like you yourself were sacked. What do you make of his extended tenure at number 10? Do you think that it spells a new era for SPADs? Like, he's more powerful, arguably, than maybe any SPAD has ever been.
I think he probably is, actually, and, you know, he's only been there just over a year. It probably feels like longer. He, of course, was a departmental special advisor, and he was sacked twice by David Cameron, once in 2010 and then later on as well when Michael Gove left government. So it's he's had a sort of fairly rough ride himself, as actually has Fiona Hill, who I mentioned earlier, who was Mrs. May's chief of staff. She, of course, was sacked as well for leaking something in a row with Michael Gove, actually. So it's a very, very interesting, you know, you're sometimes up, sometimes you're down, and the trick is to try and treat people the same way in either eventuality. Dominic Cummings, of course, I mean, I will say that he's actually a strategic genius. I think, you know, I stood in a meeting, I think it was possibly the first meeting I had with him. A lot of different special advisors were there, of course, as well, and he said, you know, this was August 2019, so we'd had a really rough time. I'd come through the last 68 months of the May administration. It was really choppy, it was very, very difficult, there was so little authority, and, you know, we were all pretty dejected, actually. And the ones of us who survived into the Johnson administration, Dominic stood at the front and said, you know, we're going to, in the next few months, we're going to, you know, we're going to get Brexit done. We're going to have an election and we're going to win a massive majority. And I stood there and thought, this guy is not touch with reality. And all three things happened. And I was absolutely wrong and he was absolutely right. And, you know, you've got to give him credit for that. Of course, there are things that have happened since the Barnard Castle incident that, of course, was extremely controversial. And I think, you know, far more has been said on that than ever needs to be said. I think everybody has an opinion on that. But I think you can very clearly point to any success that the Johnson administration has had. He has been very heavily involved with it. He's a brilliant campaigner as well. Of course, I voted Remain, but he was in charge of the Leave campaign in 2016. That was an astonishing victory. And I think he is a very, very intelligent, very strategic person who will continue to do great things. It's not often you get someone who can kind of defend someone who they've been sacked by. But I actually think he's probably a good force in British politics. I know a lot of people disagree with that, but I think when you see him up close, when you work with him, he is very, very clear, and that's what you need in politics for such a long time. Friendly with and have great admiration for the people who worked in the Theresa May administration at the very top, people like Gavin Barwell, for example, now Lord Barwell. There were no boundaries and there was no goal. And I sort of thought of my 7-year-old nephew, actually. You know, he thrives when there are boundaries and when there's a goal. And, you know, Dominic brought in boundaries, he brought in a goal. And that's what we worked towards and that's what we achieved. And I was very privileged to be part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about, I guess, the May administration and the Johnson administration, so you worked under four administrations, is that right?
Four different cabinet ministers. So, James Brokenshire for about a year and a half at the Northern Ireland office. He then got cancer and very happily then recovered from that. In the interim, in the sort of 4-month period when he was away and out of cabinet, I worked for the Home Secretary Amber Rudd and James's successor as Northern Ireland Secretary Karen Bradley. Then James came back. He was there. He was in housing for about a year and a half. He was then sacked from that role by Boris Johnson. And then I worked for the Justice Secretary, Robert Buckland, for 6 months. And we had the prorogation of Parliament. We had lots of annoyed Supreme Court justices, etc. So there was plenty to keep us busy during that 6 months. It was not dull at all.
Do you have a favourite person that you've worked under? Which minister do you think you got the most done under, or like helped create the most change for?
The year or so, it was just over a year that I worked with James at housing was an incredible period. We got a lot of stuff done, kind of sort of boring but important stuff. We got a £600 million fund to remediate, to change the cladding, flammable cladding on buildings, which will save lives, definitely. We abolished Section 21, which means that people have a much longer tenure in rented accommodation. They can't just be chucked out after 6 months. And we got the rough sleeping numbers in terms of homeless people, rough sleeping numbers down by 9%. That which doesn't sound like a huge amount, but really is pretty huge in terms of the fact that they've been going up every year for the past, the previous 9 years. So I think there's a lot that James did there. That's not just him, it's not just me, it was the whole team. There was a brilliant special advisor who I write a bit about in the book called Liam Booth Smith, who was James's policy advisor, and he's gone on to be Rishi Sunak's chief of staff, actually. So a really, really impressive guy, very nice guy, who's one of my best friends in politics, and he pops up in the book from time to time. So that was a really special time. There was lots that we did there. It's sort of a mid-ranking department, possibly not the most glamorous department. We're the department for bins, as some people described it, because we did local government and bin collections. But we were also the department for earthquakes. If there's an earthquake, we were in charge. So it was very, very exciting. And there, you know, you think housing might be boring, you know, it's not. It's quite literally where people live, and everybody has a view on housing, just as everybody has a view on the NHS or education. So it's one of those departments that touches everybody's life. And there was always lots to do, and it was fascinating. It was just, when I think back on it, I think of doing a lot of things, being very tired, and also just so many laughs. I mean, James was just, he comes across, when you see him on TV, he comes across as sort of quite serious, quite a kind of, you know, he's the security minister at the moment, you know, he's dealing with sort of MI5 and things, so obviously that's a very serious thing, but sort of behind the scenes, he's great fun, and just such a lovely, lovely, kind person.
Yeah, I mean, it would be remiss of me not to kind of dig further into the fun element, because obviously we all know politics is a bit of a circus sometimes, and your book definitely contains some interesting characters and some even more interesting anecdotes. So quickly then, I don't want to spoil too much of the book, but can you just say, what's the strangest thing you've ever did as a spad?
Gosh, the strangest thing I ever did as a spad. It's a toss-up between a great story I tell in the book about Boris Johnson hiding from Ian Duncan Smith, getting my inside leg measured in a government office for a suit, and dealing with a story lasting 8 days about James Brokenshire's ovens. There was a story about him having 4 ovens, and that just went on and on and on and on. And it was in all the papers, and it was like Kathy, James's wife, told me that one of their friends in America saw the news in America. I mean, it was crazy. So yeah, there were lots of really silly things. Although I think the thing that topped it all was we were very occasionally, usually when we flew to Northern Ireland, I flew back and forward between Belfast and London a lot, every week usually. But there was one occasion where we couldn't fly on, you know, Aer Lingus or British Airways or whatever, and we had to take a private plane because of the timing of votes and things. And we saw Kevin Spacey in this private lounge. He was just sitting in this private lounge of this airport at, you know, 5:30 in the morning or whatever it was. It was absurd. And yeah, you do kind of deal with these kind of strange moments. Although I think the moment in the book that is most surreal is when Sue Pollard, who many people know as the eccentric actress, went up to the Prime Minister and said, "Heidi, hi, Theresa," which I think is probably the most surreal moment of the book.
Yeah, there's so many to choose from, to be honest. I feel a bit mean asking you to pick one. So let's draw the conversation to a close then by asking, what's one thing you hope people will take away from reading your book?
I think that hopefully people will think it's funny. Hopefully people will think it's informative. Hopefully people will think it's enjoyable. It's a bit mad, but actually the business of running the country is a lot of fun. It's really interesting. You've got a huge responsibility. But at the same time, I think what I'd like people to take away from it is the fact that people aren't out for themselves. There are definitely some MPs and ministers who are out for themselves, who want power for the sake of it, who maybe want to, you know, just ambition is everything. But even people whose ambition is everything want to, there's some kernel of them that wants to make the country better for people. And I think, you know, I have great admiration for people from all walks of life, from all political parties, even people who work for, you know, my greatest political opponents and Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet or whatever, who really want to make life better for people. I may totally disagree with them, but I do agree we have more in common, and I hope what people will take away is that most people, not everybody, but most people are in politics for the right reasons.
One last question, actually. Did you ever manage to find your way around the Palace of Westminster without getting lost?
No, never. Very, very occasionally. No, I have a terrible sense of direction. I have less a bad sense of direction than no sense of direction. But occasionally, there were usually people on hand, but no, it's an incredibly difficult place. I remember I once asked Greg Clark, the business secretary, for directions to somewhere I'd been, you know, literally hundreds of times before. It is a labyrinthine place, and there are probably, you know, there are probably ministers from the Thatcher administration who are still in there somewhere. Just sitting in a room, still lost, like the Japanese soldiers at the end of World War II.
Just stuck in a broom cupboard somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't think I'll be any better than you if that's any consolation. So Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me.
No worries at all, Vicky. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Bite Back podcast. If hearing Peter's tales of his time in government interested you, then why not pick up a copy of his book, The Secret Life of Special Advisors? It's available now from bitebackpublishing.com and all good bookshops. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Until next time.